Hi, right, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Bob Larson and Matt Meisner. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I appreciate having you guys with us. Dr. Meisner is a clinician here at the Veterinary School of Kansas State, works on cattle of all types, and really has done some neat things with feet and legs, talked about some other diseases. We'll talk today how to deal with some of those feet problems. We've also got a listener question specifically on a corkscrew claw. Also, talk about some of these issues in our fall-born calves. Before we get into those topics, I wanted to remind you, if you have a question, you have something you want to talk to us about, you could send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. We also send out a weekly email newsletter. If you're interested in that, you can send us an email at bci@ksu.edu. Dr. Meisner, we are happy to have you with us here today, and I don't know if I've told you, but I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with you. Our sons go to school together, and the other day, our sons are playing video games. It's a Saturday afternoon. We at our house are going to have leftovers for dinner. My son's talking to your son over the video game, and he said, hey, at Matt's house, they're having barbecued brisket, ribs, just a feast, and so we thought we would just come over and visit.
There's only a few things that I can get that kid to get off of the computer with, and you know, food and meat, especially barbecue, gets him off of it pretty quickly.
it's a meat lure.
You lure, well, actually,
you lure him out.
That worked for me too. When can I come over?
Of course, then I feed him and I make him at least do some chores. So at least I get him off it, get him some energy, and then we head out to do some work. So, but yeah, of course, not that I don't enjoy it either. So it's pretty good.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about you, Matt. So you're a clinician here at K-State, and you came in 2006?
Six, yep. So yep. Been here since 06, so going on 15 years. And we transitioned from here from Ohio. I'm actually a New Mexican, went to vet school at Washington State. So it's been a around the world kind of thing, but we seem to have settled here for certain sure. We really enjoy it. Seeing mostly stuff in the clinic, my topics today, and the great majority of what we do and what we really like to do. And you kind of have to enjoy it, to want to keep doing it, is lameness in this cattle stuff. So we see a lot of that, but we see a lot of seasonal things. So sick calves, dystocias, and then the what have yous all summer. You know, you never know what's going to happen in the summer. All kinds of crazy fun stuff happens in the summertime. So so you're here to see it all. We see it on the regular clients, as well as we've had things come in clear from Montana in the past. So got a really good crew here and really like what they do, and they're really good at what they do. So it's a lot of fun.
And you went through this summer, fall, early winter transition with some new facilities here at the vet school, and have upgraded and now have some of the facilities to deal with some of those foot problems as well as other conditions.
Yeah. You know, and I've been here for that long, and oh my gosh, our facility was so outdated. Just to move cattle was a bit of a risk. It was inefficient. It was a little bit dangerous. And what do? We preach a lot to clients about safe, efficient animal handling.
Have good facilities.
Good facilities, yeah.
You know, they get them and they build them, and then they bring something here and they go, hey, you guys don't exactly practice what you preach. We do now. So we've got bud systems. We've got good alleys with gates. We've got a new adjustable lead up to our tilt table hydraulic chute flow through. There's no backing up. So we're just excited about that. And now we've incorporated a lot of those things into our, not just for teaching, but, you know, basically just good animal handling. And so it's a lot of fun, and makes our job a lot more fun and efficient.
So, and actually, the last few times that I've been through down there, you've had some foot issues that you're dealing with. What do you see at this time of year? And a lot of times I'm thinking adults, right? So either a bull or a cow, and they're having foot problems. What are you seeing? What are you treating?
So the Flint Hills will always provide a never endless supply of lamenesses, and that's just the nature of the terrain, of the environment. And so we see everything from a basic foot rot, which is infection in between the toes, okay, to a lot of toe sole abscesses, which are infection that gets underneath the sole, and it's sometimes a bruise. It starts out, sometimes it's a puncture. I have dug out pieces of flint on the bottom of it. We have hedge apples. We've got locust thorns, all of those things that just love to drill into the bottom of the foot. So we can get abscesses. And then we do see a fair number of laminitis, some warts, and then the conformational things, which we'll get into probably a little bit later. But we do see some conformational lamenesses, which lead to ulcers and infected joints and tendon problems and a lot of a variety of them.
Okay, so question, if I'm in the field as a producer, and you said two main things, the toe abscess, which can be stimulated by something poking into that foot, you get an infection up in that toe, or foot rot, which is between the toes, how do I differentiate those two, or does it matter if I differentiate those two?
So the most common way to differentiate the two is by swelling in the foot. Foot rot will always have a swollen foot, and it's a symmetric foot. It looks really swollen above the hair hoof line or the coronary band up to the dew claws, and sometimes higher. So that's a foot rot, almost always. What's nice about that, you can recognize it, you can see it, you're going to give antibiotics to it. Commonly, clients will give antibiotics to a lameness, you know, suspecting that because it's so common, and they'll give it, and the nice thing about foot rot is it still responds very well to antibiotics. So, if you think you have foot rot, and you hopefully can see it, they should be better after that antibiotic in a few days. My question is when it's not, and you call and you say, I treated him for foot rot, my question is, did you see any swelling? Because sometimes that hoof abscess will not show any swelling. It's almost always confined in the claw itself. And we will see some, but it may be an asymmetric swelling in that there's more swelling on one side versus the other side. You know, foot rot is between the toes, and it's nasty. It smells bad. So, but again.
And those lesions that are down in the claw, they're not going to respond nearly as well to antibiotics as a foot rot will.
No. So the presentation for a hoof abscess will oftentimes be a sudden onset severe lameness, and you may have treated it with antibiotics, and it may have gotten better. But sometimes that what happened was it wasn't the antibiotics, it's the pressure from that pus that came out the bottom of that foot, and it looked better. So I hear something on Saturday. Well, he was really lame on Saturday. I gave some antibiotic. I was going to bring him in to you on Monday, but he's right as rain. My question is, was he swollen? No, I didn't see anything. Bring him in anyway, because most likely I'm going to put him up on the table and there's going to be an abscess we need to finish cleaning out. And it's important because if you let that go, that infection can go deeper and deeper and deeper and then become a real severe problem. So it's important on the presentation side. If they don't get better, go to your veterinarian, or put them in the chute and have a good look at the bottom of their foot. You know, it's really important.
So two really important things that you've said that I just want to pick up on. One, if it has a swelling and I think it's foot rot and I treat him with antibiotics and he gets better, probably it was a foot rot and probably we're okay. If I treat him with antibiotics and it does not get better, it probably wasn't foot rot. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that,
I need to do something different.
Or it went deeper into the foot. So it could have been a foot rot, but if it was just basic foot rot, it should be better.
I should do something different. And the second was, if it's something like a toe abscess, there may not be swelling in that foot, and I'm probably going to have to do more. So if it doesn't respond the way I think, take it to your vet. Get them up because you really need the facilities to get them up on that table to really evaluate what's going on in the foot. I'm saying him, but it could be bull or cow.
Yeah, and I wanted to emphasize that because a lot of times when you see lameness in an adult, so now we're talking about a big animal that's not convenient to work with, particularly if you want, if you want me to bring him into a chute and give him a shot of antibiotics, I can do that. But when you're talking about picking up a foot of an adult bull or cow, all of a sudden now we're starting, well, that could be dangerous. That sounds difficult. And the good thing is a lot of times that's a good time to bring in a veterinarian, because a lot of times they have the facilities and the training, but the facilities to really make that doable in a way that's safe to the animal, safe to the people. And kind of like what you were saying, Brad, just treating with antibiotics, which is easy because I can get a cow or bull into a chute and treat them with antibiotics. That's probably not going to solve any of these things that aren't foot rot. And so maybe that's why as veterinarians, we do deal a lot with feet, because that's one of the things. It's just really hard to do with the facilities and the labor and stuff that we've got on most ranches.
And despite sometimes things will get better on their own, but I would say even outside of foot rot or toe abscesses, if you treat something and it doesn't respond the way you expected, then figure out what the next steps are. Don't just wait, right? If you wait, it may not get better on its own. And that's one of the things we deal with. You mentioned, Matt, as we were talking about, it's fall, we've got fall-born calves, and right now we've gone through some weather shifts, right? It's that time of year where it'll be 60 degrees and then it'll be a high of 30 degrees or 20 degrees a couple days later. And a lot of the part of the country goes through that. That's hard on these fall-born calves. What are some of the diseases that you see in those fall-born calves as we go through these weather shifts?
So one of the things we see are some of these pneumonia type setups. So they're hot one day, they're huffing and puffing, they're moving around really good. Next day it's cold and wet. We had a little bit of snow for a day or two, and then it comes back again, blast. And it's dry. So we've got dust. We've got some wind. We've got some just kind of setup for some problems. And then if they get exposed to a pathogen or whatnot, I mean, some of that is going to be their immune system was a little bit on edge already. And we can take that a bit further, and not just respiratory, but our plain old diarrhea type calf, the scouring calf that we'll see plenty of, and a little bit of fluids or oral fluids is good. But these calves are already set up to be somewhat dried up and dehydrated before they get the diarrhea. So the things we're seeing, we see them, we need to act on them a little quicker because there's a little less lag time before we need to start treating, because they're already set up to be dehydrated or to have problems with it. And I just see it, I can predict it. I love this day. I mean, it's wonderful. I get to go outside. It's wonderful, but I'm dreading, Monday after we've been hot like this, and we're going to get cold and miserable. And I know we're going to have some issues to deal with.
So do you think that the key to, and I think really good point, what you're saying is this is going to impact their immune system, kind of moves up and down. And the critical part may be don't wait. If they're a little off, are you saying you might treat a little bit sooner, a little bit more aggressively, especially when the weather conditions are like this?
Have them examined sooner. You see some ears that are a little bit droopy, or you see some loose stool coming out of that calf. Be ready and act a little bit sooner than you may, in the late spring where you see a little bit, or when the weather's been sort of consistent, you got some time, but right now it seems to be you want to jump on it sooner.
Yeah. And Bob, how does that fit with when we think about the group dynamics and a group of animals that might be getting sick? Am I going to have an intervention a little bit sooner when the weather is moving up and down like this?
Well, I think weather is one of the things that everybody recognizes. It really does affect cattle health. And it's a couple things you talked about. The immune system, stress can decrease the animal's ability to really react to these germs. The other thing is, two things, you harm the sanitation. So you've got mud, you've got manure. And then in some of these weather situations, cattle congregate and they start getting really close together. And so that does two things. It makes my sanitation a bigger issue, and it makes it a whole lot easier to pass germs from one to another. They're not social distancing. They are packed together because of some of the weather effects. And so I think it's not surprising.
Weather or feeding.
Well, that's true.
Anything that feed them. Right? We feed them, we encourage them to congregate, whether we're feeding, if they're not weaned calves, but if they're young calves, they're going to go where their moms go, and their moms are going to go where the feed is, and that may be in a hay ring or a feed bunk or however we're feeding them.
Yeah, and again, like Matt said, we get away with that pretty well when the weather's nice and the cattle are pretty happy and the, you know, they're on a, you know, on a pasture with where they can spread out most of the time. But things start piling up on each other and you start getting multiple things going wrong. You can get into trouble quickly. And so I think one of the things I think we're saying is when the weather turns on us, when we have some challenges there, it's probably going to actually multiply. It's not just one more problem. It's actually kind of multiplied problems.
So two take homes that I'm getting from you guys. One, the weather's moving like this up and down. Interventions or evaluations a little bit earlier in the process, a little bit more of a hair trigger. And two, manage the sanitation even more, right? So be sure that you've got the sanitation under control. And both of those I think are really critical and good take homes for the fall weather. One of the other questions, and I'm going to go back to feet because, Matt, I know you do a lot of that. You've done a lot of work in this area. And we actually had a listener question that was related to screw claws or corkscrew claws. And I think all of us have had this question in practice, right? Is this hereditary or not? Should I cull this animal or should I try to trim it and salvage it? And I want to get both Matt and Bob, I want to get your opinions on this topic. And the corkscrew claw typically is where that outer hoof wall curves back under, and they may be walking on that hoof wall, and that one toe looks a little bit like a corkscrew.
Yep. And we talked earlier, and I hear this all the time, and there's essentially two schools of thought. Absolutely, it's heritable. Every bit of that line needs to be culled. It's not so bad. I can deal with it. When you look at literature, Bob would say too, it's just, there's just not a lot there. I've only found the heritability factor in one breed, somewhere here, and I really wish I could find that specifically. But, more recently, the Angus Association is looking at it, but there's really no hard objective data to say so. But I will say that individuals with the problem probably are going to be a problem. And so when they have that early on, it's probably a good reason to get rid of them anyway, at least on the beef side. But the thing...
So you're saying if she's got the problem or he's got the problem, they're going to continue to have it. It's not going to go away. You can't fix it. So you may not want to cull them from genetic reasons, but it's going to be recurring.
It's confirmational. It's a confirmational risk. Right. So it's a confirmational risk that could potentially lead to some of that pathology that we're talking about, deep digital sepsis, lameness, stress. So you see that in a bull that's going to be limping around on that foot. How do you trust him? In different situations, those other characteristics they're passed on may be good. If they can monitor closely, they can deal with it. It's interesting. I mean, like you said, the Angus Association has a foot score now. It's been out for about 6 years, I think. And they're getting some data to put together that their early thoughts are on the upper end of the extreme, maybe a 25% input from genetics. But again, 75 to 80%, that's environmental. So it's really hard to put it down on just specifically genetics. But if you're in the environment and you have a bad foot, yeah, it's going to be a problem.
This question has been around as long as I've been in practice and before. And in fact, some of my textbooks when I was in vet school said that there was a genetic or heritable component to corkscrew claw. And I think people are kind of starting to question that a little bit. And that I think what most, I don't know what most people would do. I would say there may be a genetic component, but if it was a really strong genetic component, it would have been easy to find by now. And so I think one of the take homes from that is you're really going to have to, if you want to prevent corkscrew claw or deal with it, you're going to have to make the environment as good as possible. And you need to be aware of the things that can lead to these hoof problems. And I'm going to say it's different than what we were talking about with these fall calves, but one hoof problem can lead to another hoof problem, in that you know, if you made that hoof sore, so she's standing on her foot a little bit different, well, then the hoof wall grows a little bit different. And then you get this vicious cycle of things going on. So that foot health can become quite complicated in that she's got more than one foot or leg problem all at the same time. And one can kind of lead to another. So, and again, that's why as veterinarians, it seems like if we work with beef cattle, you are going to be working with feet and legs. They're out walking long distances. They're outside. They might pick up a thorn or bruise their foot with a rock. And one small problem can lead to more problems, including things like corkscrew claw.
Let me put you guys on the spot. I've got my favorite cow. I really like her. She fits my herd. She fits in well. She has a corkscrew claw, but I want to keep her in my herd because I want to save heifers out of her the next few years so I can have more like her. And I get that I may have to bring her back in and have her trimmed up again. Keeper or color? Remember, she's my favorite. She actually has a name, not just a number. So should I keep her or color?
Matt, I'll make you go first.
So I have that all the time, and I give them that thought. Okay, it's a risk. I say keep her if you like her. I mean, and change your environment. Keep her comfortable. Watch what she's going to do. Now, the start with this cow, and if you start noticing this is a repeat offenders as they're coming out, maybe you need to reconsider keeping her offspring because you may not like them quite as much as you like her right then, right? So we can make those decisions on offspring, but recognize now she's going to be a target. But change the environment. I see this in guys that are managing bulls just by changing. They might have had some of these conformational problems in the past. So we change nutrition. We change the environment they were at when they were in early age, and we see a lot less of it. You know, we know that, those genetics are still in those bulls, but we see a lower percentage of them that are affected. So change your environment, treat her well because you like her, and get her trimmed often, but be sure that we start thinking of the future decisions on those cows.
Think of some of the other factors. Bob, keeper or color?
You know, and I like you. I like that you're putting me on the spot. Not really. But when I was younger, you know, based on the way I was trained, I would have said cull her. But, you know, I've been around a long time, and I'm not now. And it's hard to teach an old dog, me, a new trick, but I wouldn't say that anymore. I would probably lean towards keeping her. But like Matt said, you know, if you keep her and now, you know, I would keep her because I think the genetic component is either not there or it's a pretty small contributor. And I think that, but if you hear some hesitation in my voice, it's because I'm not 100% sure. But I would probably keep her. If there's enough other things about her genetically that I like, I would keep her.
Yeah,
it's different than I would have said 20 years, 30 years ago.
Well, we know it's been a while since you went to school because you talked about having textbooks. How long has it been since we've had textbooks, Bob?
Well, and that stone tablet that I used to have to carve on, you know.
Tablet, you're thinking a different thing. So last topic, and I just want to address this briefly. And while we've got Matt on, because this is a question that comes up as well, winter time, and I'll just pick Kansas because all three of us live here. What are the shelter needs for the mature cows? So I'm gonna put calves in a different pile. Let's not think about them. But I've got spring calving cows. They're out. They're on pasture or grazing crop residue. What are my shelter needs for those girls?
Yeah, I probably should let Bob go first on this one, but I did mine, and I think we'll get more, but wind, for certainly being Kansas, some sort of wind breaks, and then best we can to have cover is nice. But I don't know, there's probably more specifics than I'm not thinking of, but as long as we can get wind, and we talked about all those lower critical temperature thresholds, and it's all additive number with humidity and all that stuff, but wind breaks, I think, are my most important things. Being able to get to those wind breaks if the snow starts drifting, of course. But,
Yeah. That my opinion is that, you know, and again, so let's talk about Kansas. So our winters can be we can have some, certainly some cold days and cold nights, but not as much as it, as you move farther north. And I really don't like to congregate cows. As we were saying before, I like to keep them spread out as much as possible, both for sanitary reasons and to keep them from passing germs from each other. And as soon as I build a shelter, they're going to start congregating behind that shelter. And what I find is in most pastures, cows will kind of find that microenvironment, find that they'll figure out the best place to get to where they're out of the wind. And so if there's some trees, if there's some shelter belts, even if there's just some high and low places or some hills, I'm pretty confident that my adult cattle, this totally different answer with calves, or a slightly different answer with calves, but with adult animals, if they can, they'll find their own microenvironment. And I don't necessarily want to build a shelter where they're going to congregate very closely. That's, again, I like a shelter belt because they can still spread out and not be all congregated. I've seen some situations, though, if you move a little bit farther north, I've been to some ranches where, you know, up in Iowa, northern Iowa, there's some really, really flat country. So they don't have the hills. And the wind coming across there, and it's colder than it is here, and they had the cattle confined in a relatively small area, so it wasn't a really large pasture. In those situations, so it becomes a really hard question in those situations, because I do want some shelter, because the cows couldn't really find a good micro environment where they were out of the wind. And so you build a shelter, but then immediately we really had to start dealing with manure and stuff right on the other side of that, you know, on the cow side of the shelter. And it's like, I don't like this hand I'm being dealt. I need some shelter from the wind, but as soon as I build that, now I've got a real sanitation problem. So my answer for Kansas and where we are is I like them out on pasture. I like them out where they can spread out, and I'm going to kind of count on those cows to find that micro environment where they're pretty comfortable.
But I think also it depends on, as you said, it's not just how cold it gets, but how long it is that cold, right? So if it's a few days, if it's off and on, you may have areas that you can bring them to for that cold snap and then let them spread back out is one solution that I've seen people do, right? They have a spot that they can come to, but then the sanitation is less of a problem because they're not there 100% of the time, right? The cows are like us. They're going to follow their daily patterns, and they're going to do what they do, where they lay, where they hang out. But it's up to us to kind of modify that. So I think that's a great place to consult with your extension specialist, your veterinarian, somebody for your area, because it's different for Kansas than it is for other parts of the country.
And different for the Flint Hills versus western Kansas.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Even within the state. And Matt, we've really appreciated you joining us today, and really good information on some of the foot issues that we deal with, as well as thinking about disease in those fall calves. And happy to have you listening as well. If you have questions, thoughts, anything you'd like us to talk about on a future episode, please send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.